Okay, good morning. This is Richard Hsu, host of Hsu Untied. This morning, I'm very pleased and thrilled to have as my guest a fellow Caltech alum, Robert Lang, who's an origami artist and consultant. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So I'm at the home of Robert's very nice studio in his in the back of his home where he's got a ton of origami. Tell me, Robert, how did you get into this field coming out of Caltech, where you were obviously an engineer or scientist of some kind, I'm assuming?
Origami is a lot older than Caltech was for me. I started origami at the age of 6.
Oh, is that right?
And so it was a childhood hobby, a way to make toys, and something that I could pursue pretty much anywhere, anytime. That was one of the appeals. Another was I didn't need anything other than paper and my hands to make all these different shapes, and that was pretty fun. So throughout childhood, I started folding from books and worked exclusively from books for many years. I'd try to find every book I could about origami to try to learn new things and learn as many different things as I could. And then in my teens, when I kind of exhausted all the books I could find in the local libraries, I started trying to develop my own designs because I wanted to make things that I didn't find in any books. And so that led to a lifetime of developing new origami designs. And so it was already quite the passion by the time I arrived at Caltech.
What did you like as a kid? What even interested you to begin with? I mean, most kids are running around, you know, playing with soccer balls and stuff. What was it about origami that fascinated you?
Well, I certainly had multiple passions and enjoyments as a kid. I loved tramping around in the woods and exploring wildlife and learning the names of plants and trees and things like that. But origami, it satisfied a desire to make things. And what made that more desirable than, say,
Lego bricks?
I did Lego. I did tons of Lego. So I did a lot of that. But I think maybe the thing origami and Lego had in common is that you didn't need much in the way of materials. Well, Lego, you needed a bunch of bricks. But you could make a huge variety of things from very simple starting materials. And in origami, the starting material was even simpler than Lego. Because all you needed was a sheet of paper. And paper was free, so that was the other thing. If you wanted to expand your Lego kit, you had to go buy it. Had to come up with money to go buy it. Save up your allowance or whatever. But with origami, all I needed was scrap paper.
And did someone teach it to you? Did someone show you origami? You literally just found it by looking at some books and...
I learned it from books. When I was about 6, I found a book that had instructions for 4 figures in it, for the traditional designs. And I folded those same things over and over and over. And my parents saw that I enjoyed this. And so when they would see a book or at birthday time, they'd get me a book that had more instructions in it. And so that's how it built. I worked entirely from books, never met another origami artist in person until graduate school, actually.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
But I did, in my teens, strike up a postal pen pal relationship with an origami artist, one of the greats of American folding, a man named Neil Elias. And he was hugely influential on me because he was one of the most inventive folders in the 70s in the U.S., even in the world. And he shared with me some of his unpublished work that was that displayed techniques unlike anything in the traditional Japanese, and that gave me a kind of a much broader toolkit to work with in trying to develop my own designs.
I'm sure when you start off as a kid, you were just folding for fun or whatever. When did you actually kind of figure out, like, hey, I'm actually kind of good at this? Or when did that realization happen? I mean, at some point, that must have occurred to you, like, oh, I'm actually pretty good at this.
I think it actually occurred to me in my teenage years that I felt like the designs I was coming up with were as good as the things that were in any books.
Oh, interesting.
And
did your parents like, wow, Robert, this is pretty amazing? Or like, did they seem to notice it? Or did they never realize what you were doing?
Well, they certainly knew I was deeply involved in origami, right, but I don't think they were close enough to it to be able to evaluate whether, you know, to even know whether I folded something, if it was my design or something I'd gotten from a book. They just saw that I could make all these different pretty nice paper shapes.
So when was it that somebody, when was the first time that somebody who's actually like an origami authority or whatever actually said to you, wow, this is good, or whatever, you know, like actually gave you some credibility that, you know, you're talented at this?
Well, this would have been in my early 20s. I was in grad school by then at Caltech, and I forget why, but I had the opportunity to go to New York and visit some of the kind of big name origami people who were at that time based in New York. And they said, well, if, so I wrote to them, I said, I'm going to be in New York, could I visit and sort of see the Origami Center? It was based at the American Museum of Natural History. And the one of the people there, Alice Gray, who's an entomologist at the museum and a big name origami person, said, oh, sure, you come on by, we can visit, and why don't, I'll get together a bunch of the origami people in the area and you can teach us something. And so I thought, okay, I'll teach them this dragonfly design I had that was, I thought was pretty good. And when I got there and I taught it, and they were, most of the people were struggling pretty hard to fold it. And it wasn't because I was a bad teacher. It was because it was very complex. And at that point, someone said, you know, this is really advanced and complex. And
wow,
that was kind of the point I started to get calibration of where I sat in the bigger world of
origami. Were they surprised at how good you were, considering you hadn't formally studied with like an origami master or anything like that? Was that also an unusual part of it, or maybe not so much?
Not so much, because there weren't that many origami masters, and the dynamic of the origami masters in Japan was very hierarchical and very tradition-based, so that they weren't really pushing the envelope in terms of the complexity and realism. So the path to advances in origami was happening in many cases by individual practitioners, people who had learned through a less formal process, and people all over the world, in Japan, in the U.S., and the U.K., and others. So in one sense, it was surprising that, you know, this new person popped out of the woodwork who was folding at a very advanced level. But in the other sense, it wasn't surprising that I wasn't known, because there was not a lot of communication. There were a lot of people working in isolation then. It's much harder now because we have the internet, which is this fantastic means of
connecting
people. So I know wonderful folders in Vietnam and Uruguay and Argentina because they've put their things out on the web and everyone can see and people can correspond. But, you know, back in the late 70s, early 80s, there was basically the post.
So when did you realize, or when did you think that you would actually do this as a profession? I assume that when you went to Caltech, you weren't thinking you were going to be an origami artist as a profession, or did you?
No, not at all. origami was a hobby, and I never envisioned it really as anything more than that. So at Caltech, I studied electrical engineering as an undergraduate, and then applied physics, lasers, and optoelectronics as a grad student.
Right.
And that was going to be my career, and origami would continue to be this passion throughout my life,
right,
which it was. So as I was sort of progressing through the career path of a laser physicist working at Jet Propulsion Lab and then spectrodiode labs in Silicon Valley, I was pursuing origami pretty intensely as a sideline. And so I had written several books that were quite well received and had a pretty good reputation in the origami world, but it was completely separate from the world of science and engineering.
Oh, I see.
But I had an idea for a book that I'd had really even since graduate school, which was a book about not just recipes of how to fold specific things, but how to design origami so that instead of learning to follow a bunch of steps, people would learn how to create their own designs. Mm. And so I had this concept of a book, and I'd been trying to write pieces of it for a really long time, and had finally came to the conclusion that the reason it wasn't gelling was that I needed to think about it full time, that I couldn't work on it a little bit at a time, set it aside, and then pick it up again and write where it was. So I realized if I was going to write this book, I was going to have to do it full time, and I had a choice to make. Do I continue on the laser path and I probably never write that book, or do I do something different and write the book? So it's, do I take the red pill or do I take the blue pill?
Scary decision.
Yeah. And so I decided whatever I was accomplishing in the world of lasers, there were tons of great laser physicists in the world, and they'd find anything that I would find eventually. But I didn't think there was anyone else who could write the book I wanted to write. So I decided to quit my job, which I did in 2001, and spend a year, 2 years, working on that book. Well, during that, and then I also thought, well, that also frees me up to follow up all the leads for other origami activities that I'd mostly kind of not followed up because I had a full-time job and a wife and a kid and family and all this sort of thing. So I also started following up on leads for other origami things and doing lectures and workshops and getting people interested in consulting and go doing consulting. And by the time I finished the book and the book came out and I had to decide what's next, I had a pretty active origami career. And so I've just kept up with that ever since.
So what do you do now? You primarily write books, you primarily create origami, you primarily lecture. What is kind of your mix now of activities?
The big thing is there is no primarily. It's a lot of different things,
right,
and the mix varies from year to year. So in some years, the mix has been more commercial art for advertising. So it's a mix of commercial art for advertising.
And when you say commercial art, you mean somebody has an idea and they say, Robert, we'd like to hire you to create this in origami?
Is that what you mean? An ad agency says we've got an idea for an ad. Our client's product itself is not very visual, so we want to make it a little more interesting by doing something with origami.
Oh, interesting.
A very common theme, in fact, has been to fold. Our product saves you money. Fold from money all the things you could do with the money you save using our product.
Oh, that's funny.
You know, so folding things out of dollar
using
bills.
Using dollar bills. Oh, interesting.
And sometimes they just want interesting visuals, you know, that or a transformation. You know, you sign a contract and the contract's going to fold itself into something representative of the interaction. So they say,
some interesting examples of some commercial art that you've done, or
what are some things? So I've got a bunch of dollar bill folds I'll show around the studio that, in fact, were done for a commercial. It was a cable TV company that, and it was exactly that. That you go with us, you'll save a lot of money. Here's all the things you can spend your money on. So it was a lobster dinner. Pulled a lobster sitting on a plate, or an island vacation. So I did a palm tree and a set of flip flops and a hammock.
All folded out of dollar bills,
things like that.
Interesting.
One of the biggest projects, which was now quite a few years ago, but was for a Mitsubishi car commercial. And that concept was they wanted to show their car driving through a world of origami. So for that one, I partnered with another origami artist here in San Francisco named Linda Tomoko Mihara, and we worked with a team of model builders, professional model builders, who we taught how to fold things. And so we designed and folded stuff and also taught these model builders how to make trees and buildings, and basically built six complete sets, you know, that were 20 by 20 feet of nothing but origami, buildings six feet tall that were folded from origami. And then they filmed the buildings and all the parts and then used computer magic to make it look like the car, the real car, was driving around through this. So that was an example of one of those. So that's commercial advertising work. There's art for private art collectors, people who want a piece of beautiful art that they're going to display and want that to be a piece of origami art. Consulting for companies whose products involve folding. Perhaps it's being made out of paper or cardboard. And they're looking for new and interesting designs. Or maybe it's something that's made out of plastic, but they want it to fold up because they want to make a collapsible product, something that folds flat and then can be opened out and deployed for usage.
Interesting.
And so they're going to use folding techniques. I continue to write books. And books are nice because the royalty stream is pretty steady, but you have to work a lot up front
to get the right.
How
many books have you written?
14 at this point.
Oh, wow, okay.
And working on number 15 right now.
What is it you kind of? I mean, I'm sure all of them are interesting, and I'm sure you enjoy them. But what is the of the activities that you do with the origami? Like, what is the one that really is the one that you're most passionate about? Is it? I mean, like I envision like maybe just sitting in a room by yourself with just a blank piece of paper, but maybe I'm wrong. Like, what is it actually that you, maybe it's teaching that you like the most, but what is it that you actually, that you enjoy the most, would you say?
What I like the most is variety and novelty. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that no one activity can ever be, the most of something, because I'll do one thing for a while and then something else will come up and I'll go do that. Mm-hmm. In recent years, a great deal of my work has been consulting on research projects that are being that are university research teams. A couple of professors get together and develop a research program based around folding. And this is because the National Science Foundation funded a set of 13 different research teams to develop applications of origami and folding. And so I'm a consultant on four of those projects. And so that's actually been my biggest activity the last year or two. And that has that's much more in the applied area where we're not making birds or flowers or things. Are making heart implants or neurological probes or boxes that open and close in interesting ways, or furniture that folds up and collapses, or quite a bit of it is deployables for space, solar arrays, antennas. That's actually gotten me back working with JPL, so kind of coming full circle there. But now instead of doing lasers at JPL, I'm making deployable solar occulters at JPL.
Interesting. Now, with the origami, the foldable, when you fold birds or animals or whatever, is it sort of like a a trade secret thing when you come? It's like a magician, like you never reveal how you made that origami, or it's not like that in the origami world?
It's quite the opposite. Generally, in origami, we give away our techniques.
Okay.
Now, it wasn't always that way. So I mentioned before that the traditional masters had their sort of secret sauces, recipes, and they guarded them jealously, and in some cases got pretty heated if they saw someone else folding something similar to what they had been doing. They would say, "You're copying me."
Right.
Well, and in some cases, we're talking back in the 50s, there was what we might call copying, or you might say, I think what really happened would be that one master would use some ideas and say, "Well, I've changed it, so I'm doing something new." And the first guy would say, "You didn't change it enough. It's clearly mine." And there was a lot of headbutting at that time. But that attitude really died out, I'd say, by the 60s, certainly by the 70s, where a very different ethic arose of sharing of techniques. Now, it's important to make a distinction between techniques and artwork. That origami is a piece of art, like a painting or a sculpture, and if you make a duplicate of it, that's that's not right. Mm-hmm. If it's recognizable, and the rule of thumb I claim for sort of moral purposes, if it's recognizable as the original artists, then you need to get permission mm-hmm. from the original artists mm-hmm. and so forth. Mm-hmm. But the techniques, everyone pretty much agrees, are widely available mm-hmm. to share. Mm-hmm. And so when we create something new, most origami artists, if it's feasible, will give some indication of
how
it went together, how it was done.
Now, when you look at other origami, most of the origami you see, can you kind of see like how to do it? Like, I figure at this point with your skill, like, yeah, I could see it. Like, do you pretty much know how it's done?
Not necessarily. Sometimes. Okay. It depends very much on the artwork. For something really complicated, would likely not be visible how it's done simply because most of the structure is buried inside.
Yeah, right.
So if all you see is the outside layers, which might be only a few percent of mm-hmm. all the paper there, mm-hmm. you're not going to be able to visualize what's going on the inside very well.
For example, these are all single sheets, huh?
Yeah, pretty much everything except the modular that I pointed out is a single sheet. I'll mention the cactus that's sitting right here.
Oh, yeah,
that
right.
is a single sheet, but the sheet is green on one side, red on the other. And that's why you get the pop.
How big is
red.
The sheet for this thing?
That was a 90 centimeter square.
Oh, so how big is that? That's about...
So that's 38, wow. 37
And
inches.
How long would it take you to fold that, for example?
Well, so that one took about 8 years.
8 years?
I started folding it in 2007. And I finished it in 2015. Now, that's calendar time. That wasn't continuous folding time. Right. Really what it was I spent several weeks folding on it in 2007, got discouraged, put it aside, and then earlier this year pulled it out again and said, time to finish, and spent another couple of weeks finishing it up.
Is that the longest you've ever spent building a single piece?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Wow. So how long what is the average amount of time it takes to fold a piece of origami?
Because the range is so large, average is not a good characteristic. Origami figures can be folded in like 2-3 minutes for something simple, and can take a week of solid folding. A week of not just calendar right. time, but like 40 hours of folding time and at the upper limits.
But now
I'd say most of my complex work is probably in the range of a couple hours.
Okay. And do you design all the folds before you start folding? You actually just start folding and actually kind of, is it like almost sculpture where you're sort of folding and seeing how it goes?
Some of both. Almost anything that's complex has to be designed before one starts folding. Mm. And there's two phases of the folding because your design will not include every single fold in it, but the design will include the overall structure sort of defines where flaps end up, how many flaps you have, where they end up, kind of the rough features of the shape. That'll be captured in the design, and I'll spend, even if the folding is only going to be a few hours, I might spend a week or more iterating the design before I ever start folding. Mm. But then once you've folded the shape that has the overall structure, what we call a base, then the folding shifts to one where you're not working according to a plan, but you're making folds based on one's understanding of how the paper is going to behave and a mental concept of the overall visual effect that you're after. So that'll be shaping that turns a triangle into the shape of an arm or a leg and gives it the pose that you're after.
Now, when you create a piece of artwork, are there a lot of ones that you start and then just throw it away, or you actually work with one piece and go right to the end, or how does that typically work?
Usually I only do the final folding in one or two tries. And that's because when it takes so long, if I'm spending hours and hours folding, I really, really don't want to throw it away.
Right.
So what I'll do is I'll spend many hours designing and even test folding little bits of the design where I might print out a tiny patch of a pattern and fold it just to make sure that all the layers are going to go the way I want them to. But I'll spend all this time working on the design to make sure it's really the way I want, so that when I settle down to fold the display piece, I'm very likely to succeed.
What is your favorite, you know, figurine or figure or artwork that you like folding? I mean, is it animals? Is it pieces of nature like this plant? I mean, what would you say it would be?
Favorite is usually the last thing I did. And I wouldn't classify any single subject as a favorite because once I've done something for a while, then I go want to try something else. I do continue to return to natural subjects. I'd say probably 3/4 of what I do is some sort of natural wildlife based. But then that other quarter is going to be geometric or mathematical or three-dimensional, usually with some heavy mathematical component to it.
What is sort of the most complex thing you've ever folded? That's cactus.
Probably in terms of just numbers of folds, it would have to be the cactus. The cactus has...
Are you going to sell this cactus?
Not yet.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I'm thinking I'd like to fold another one at some point. And if I do that, then I may sell one of them. But it was really hard. It's got, it's a barrel cactus, but it's got 9 rows of spines running up and 4 spines at each node. So there's, something like 380 individual spines, each of which is folded by... folded and shaped by hand. A ton of folding.
And when you sell this artwork, if you can say if it's not confidential, how do you price these things? Like, how do you make up a number based on how much time you spent, or how does that work?
It's a combination of how much time I spend, how desirable I think it is.
Yeah, interesting.
And in some cases, how reluctant I would be to have to fold it again. If it was something that was really hard or not particularly enjoyable, I'd push the price up because it would take more to make it worth my while to do it again.
Mm-hmm. Now, is there anybody in the world in your estimation that's actually better than you in origami? What do you think? Or do you think actually, without being too modest, or do you think you may really be literally the best origami folder in the world?
I don't think you can assign people on a linear scale in most arts, and origami is the same. How can you say whether Rachmaninoff or Chopin was a better composer? They're distinct artists. They do different things. And I think the same sort of thing applies in origami. So there are other... I consider myself a pretty good origami artist. Mm-hmm. I definitely recognize there are other origami artists who are really good. Mm-hmm. There are origami artists who I admire. They don't do what I do. I don't do what they do. Mm-hmm. So I find it difficult to try to make this comparison that says, well, one of you has to be the better one and one has to be the poorer one.
Yeah. Do you do... I hear that there's this life-size origami, which I guess, is that something you dabble in or like doing, or have you done much in that area?
I have. I did a lot more when I was younger. I haven't done much lately, life-size or oversize. The largest thing I've ever done was a flying pteranodon. It's a dinosaur-like creature that had a 14-foot wingspan, and it was folded from about a 15 or 16-foot square. That took about a week to fold. And I've done some life-size humans actually that was for a commercial commission. It was for a trade show where they wanted to decorate the booth with life-size people folded from paper because it was a paper company. So I've done that. I've gotten less interested in it as I've gotten older, partly because folding paper at large size does compromise the quality of the folding, and that bothers me. I can see the misalignments and crinkles that wouldn't have been there if I'd folded in smaller size.
What goals do you have? Is there anything in particular that you're? I mean, obviously, I'm sure you're constantly improving, but are there certain goals that you have and that you're trying to either accomplish or still achieve? What would you say about that?
Well, I don't have specific long-term goals, but in almost every subject that I fold, after I've let it settle for a while, I think there's things about that that I could improve. I'd like to do that better. Mm-hmm. There are some subjects that I've done over and over, actually. One since a favorite since childhood is the cicada. And I've folded probably 10 different cicada designs over 30 years. And even though I'm really happy with the most recent one, I also think it's likely that I will probably do a new design of that one again, because I'll perceive deficiencies mm-hmm. in the current one. So I will come back to those subjects over and over and over. A big part of what I do now and get satisfaction from now is developing the mathematics of origami. And an area that I'm kind of interested in and work with folks at Brigham Young University on is the theory of how to design origami mechanisms where the thickness of the materials is significant. Because most of the theory of origami is an approximation that assumes the paper has zero thickness. And of course it doesn't. It has finite thickness. And if you're making things like solar arrays, which might be actually on fairly thick panels, you can't neglect the thickness in your design and analysis. And so it's interesting to try to develop a theory that will accommodate the actual thickness of real-world materials.
Given how successful your life has been as an origami artist and how much you enjoy it, do you regret that you didn't start it earlier in your career, or maybe not so much?
I don't regret it. I mean, in part, even the things I did as a physicist were in some way training for this moment. When I was working for a company and having to deal with business issues like budgets and project management and negotiating research contracts, and that has stood in good stead for working as a freelance artist, where you have to develop budgets and manage projects and negotiate research contracts and negotiate IP agreements, non-disclosure agreements, and intellectual property agreements, and in some cases patents. Some of the work I've done for companies have ended up being patented, and need to be able to write good patent claims and specs and recognize what parts are patentable. So certainly everything I did in my technical career, large parts of what I did in my technical career have ended up contributing to my origami career. And, of course, probably the biggest thing was being able to have enough savings from my technical career to be able to take that leap of saying, I'm just going to write a book and not worry about, not worry about things while I write the book. So I don't regret not starting earlier. On the contrary, I consider myself incredibly lucky to have followed a path that may be a very unique path that allowed me to end up where I am right now.
What do your parents think about the fact that you became an origami artist? They think that's pretty cool.
I think they do now.
They're wondering, those books we bought him as a kid actually did pay off.
Yeah. Because they've seen they've seen some of the more public and visible things.
Right.
And so I think they can say, that's pretty good what he's done.
Well, Robert, it's been a fascinating conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time. It was really interesting and fascinating to talk to you.
It's my pleasure.
This is Richard Hsu and Robert Lang. Thanks.